Welcome back, earbuds. This is Nick, riding high after a Bears afternoon 30-point victory. Still in the playoff hunt. What's up, boys?
What's up? Yeah, I think we have an earbuds announcement to make, right?
We do have an earbuds announcement to make. So anyone who's, you know, a listener has probably heard Taylor on the show before, was just on this last episode. We're bringing Taylor on full time. We got three buds now.
What's going on? Fully guaranteed contract now, right?
Yeah. He passed his skull and bone coffin challenge. Now he's inducted.
Yeah, officially three buds on the pod. We're excited as we move into 2021. Should be fun. Probably expand into some movie content also, which is exciting for us, I think. Should be a good podcast flow. I think it's we're all really into movies, so
yeah.
I anticipate that that'll just be like very fun to add into all the shows.
I think we know equally as little about movies as music, so it works. It'll be a nice balance. Yeah, what if you were just like, yeah, I can't really talk about like music, like super and, you know, technical, but we're just all like film auteurs and like. Yeah, we all have a couple films under our respective belts.
I've got some production credits.
Yeah.
That's it's like nice. Fake music videos I made in like sophomore year of high school. What is that song? Glamorous by Fergie. That was going around. That was like the first gen like iPhone, I feel like people started filming. Anyway, we can move on. So yeah, we're gonna get into movies as well. So enjoy. We're back. We're back full time on the pod. Today we're going to talk about our favorite movies of 2020, favorite songs of 2020, and then discuss a new album from Kid Cudi, which should be super fun. Before we get into that, follow us on all the socials, the Earbuds on Spotify, Earbuds Cast on Twitter and Instagram. I think that's mostly all the housekeeping. Rate and review 5 stars. Give us, you know, 5-star reviews. Goes a long way. We'd appreciate that. News and notes, fellas. A ton of Star Wars announcements this week. It was Investor Day at Disney. So you get 15 announcements of what's coming out in the Star Wars franchise and how to gouge more money out of all of us. So instant reactions. Like, what'd you think of the announcements earlier this week?
Mark, I'll let you go first.
Yeah, it was just a lot. There were a lot of like TV shows too, which I think makes sense given the kind of fan reception I think to the sequel trilogy, and compared to what people think of Mandalorian. But yeah, I don't know. I'll watch some of it. I wasn't really like blown away by anything.
Yeah, so you're gonna get. Including The Mandalorian, based on all of the titles they announced earlier this week, you'll have 10 TV shows based on Star Wars.
Yeah, you have to be really into... granted, there are going to be like pretty spaced out over a couple of years, but even then, that's a lot of Star Wars content.
Yeah. Also, I don't know. I've always complained that I hate that they keep going back to the well of like... Like, I don't know why they need a Lando show. He's just...
Yeah.
I don't get the Lando show. Like, he betrayed. I don't understand.
I don't get the Lando because it's lore. A reason... Donald Glover's coming back for it, right?
Oh, is he?
So it's basically... That makes sense. Yeah. But yeah, the settings and the premises that they're picking are just like... You know that it's a huge, property, and you don't have to... Everything is still in the same timeline. It's like, just do something else, but whatever.
Yeah,
and I think that's where I fall in the Star Wars announcements right now is like, with the access to the streaming platforms now, like they can cater to a younger audience that doesn't have as much nostalgia for like the 1980s movies. Like I want to see the expanded universe.
Like, yeah, that's the weird thing, though.
I want someone to get creative and just make up new stories based on, like, weird fractional like lore that we've heard of, like one-off lines.
It does still seem like they are catering to just like that time period.
Yeah, like, and I don't get it. Like, they're bringing Hayden Christensen back for, as Darth Vader.
I'm actually kind of intrigued by that.
I mean, I am too, but like, it's like unnecessary to have an Obi-Wan with Ewan McGregor and Hayden Christensen.
Exactly. Yeah. Especially,
it's like, I'm like going to watch
almost
it.
Almost 20 years later.
Like, it seems interesting, and I'm going to watch it, but like, there's other characters.
Did Hayden Christensen just age really well? Like, how are they, or is he just going to be in the suit the whole time?
I imagine he's just coming back as Darth Vader, I think is the announcement they made.
I honestly don't know the last thing I've seen Hayden Christensen in. Maybe Jumpers, but that was like...
Well, if you Google him, one of the first things that pops up is, did he quit acting? Where is he today?
Yeah, it's like, what happened to him?
That's fair.
Yeah.
I mean, so I will say I'm excited for that series, the Obi-Wan Darth Vader, as much as I just kind of made fun of that. But like, I am excited for that series. I'm excited for the... oh God, I'm going to butcher her name now because I forgot to write down. Ahsoka? It's Ahsoka, right?
Sounds right.
Yeah, I think that's pretty close.
Yeah, from the Clone Wars.
It's a Star Wars character. You don't have to
Yeah, true. She's made an appearance in Mandalorian now. So that's cool. And then I wanted to ask two quick questions for you guys to like bounce some thoughts off of. One is, what's your excitement level for the Taika Waititi Star Wars film that supposedly is going to be like an original script, not based on anything?
Well, that'd be legit if it's not based on anything. I haven't heard many details, although admittedly I haven't done too much digging. But generally I stand for him, so I'll buy into anything that he does or makes an appearance in.
Yeah, I think he makes pretty entertaining movies, so...
I think he would add a very fun spin on Star Wars, especially after these interesting takes on this third like trilogy installment. I think we need something a little fresh. Yeah. Okay, so last Star Wars question. Does it bum you out at all?
Yes.
That there was answer is yes. Does it bum you out that there was there's no chatter about the Rian Johnson trilogy that he gets on his own? That was like been rumored for a couple of years now because his movie was like the one of the last three that seemed like the most unique, unless fan baiting.
I guess I'm not like super bummed about it, but I do feel a little bad. I feel like he got done dirty. But
yeah, I agree.
Whatever.
I mean, if there was chatter about it, I'd be more upset that he'd be working on that instead of Knives Out 2. So, but yeah.
Fair enough. All right, that's Star Wars talk. Next on the movie agenda is Christian Bale confirmed to be the villain in the next Thor movie.
Because along with all the Star Wars announcements, there was a bunch of MCU announcements, and I just want to say
Disney owns a lot of stuff.
I just want to say
like, Investor Day is like an 8-day period. Yeah.
About the MCU side, I do not like. I cannot get excited for any of that. I haven't consumed any MCU content since Endgame in the theater, and it's just like I'm good. like I'm sure I'll watch some of them when they come out, and the most excited I probably would be is for this one, but I just like I'm done with it for a while.
Yeah, I agree. There's just so much out there. There's kind of a fatigue with everything, and I don't know. It's just all kind of the same at this point, which I know all superhero things are all kind of the same, but
they definitely have a formula for the Marvel movies that
yes,
it's very apparent.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm definitely getting Marvel fatigue, like phase 1, 2, 3, whatever led to Endgame. I think we're like incredibly done and are very fun to go back to. I'm having a hard time transitioning into like the after Endgame zone, because same with Star Wars. It's like, we're getting a Loki series about the Falcon and Winter Soldier. Like, I don't really care about them.
Yeah.
WandaVision, I don't really care about. Black Panther 2 is going to be weird without Chadwick, I think. Yeah, like really the only one is like Thor. And like he's been a character for the last 20 years.
Spider-Man kind of does it for me. I think Tom Holland is possibly the best Spider-Man actor.
But they're just doing a, I guess Spider-Man 3 is rumored to be their like own spin on Spider-Verse. Yeah. It's just like, dude, why do you feel like you have to do that? All of
it? Similar, like, okay, so there it is. It's like, why do we have to go? We've found a good Spider-Man, Tom Holland. We've found a really cool way to tell his story in a different way. And now we're going to bring back, like, Andrew Garfield and Tobey Maguire. Like, yeah. I don't understand why.
There are so many cool Spider-Man villains that, like, could be done on screen. And, oh, man, whatever.
I mean, I would have been more pumped if they found a way to tie in Venom, because, I mean, I think he made an appearance in Spider-Man 3, but outside that, he's been, like, he was the most badass villain growing up, and they never really touch on him in the
movies. He's got his own movie, Tom Hardy, baby.
Actually, I haven't seen that yet.
No, I have not seen that yet either.
The only thing that makes me watch.
Oh, Davante Adams just torched the Lions. See ya. All right, that does it for movie news. Last bit of news is Pusha T confirms his next album. I think it's been rumored for a while that it's been in the works, but he hopped on IG Live and mentioned that it's produced by Kanye and the Neptunes, which I think is pretty dope. Kanye really crushed it on this last album with Pusha T, and I think the Neptunes angle is super interesting. So,
yeah, I completely agree. Daytona rocked. So anytime Kanye's producing, I'm excited about it, but I don't actually care about Kanye rapping anymore at this point.
Yeah,
it'll be interesting to see if the Neptunes gives it a little more like upbeat, bouncy vibe compared to Daytona. But yeah, I mean, it's good to hear that he's got an album in the works or on the way. Cool news.
And we're getting a Kanye produced Playboy Cardi album on Christmas.
Oh, okay.
Which I think will be really sick. Playboy Cardi is dope.
Happy birthday, Jesus.
Yeah, happy birthday, Jesus. Sorry, your party's lame. I think that I'm excited for that for sure. All right, any other news topics you guys want to talk about? General notes? Otherwise, we can dive into favorite movies from 2020.
Let's do it.
Yeah. All right, let's rip it. Before we dive in, I do just want to caveat that this year has been very weird for movies, obviously. I think the three of us have always enjoyed going to movies together and like diving into like new releases and favorite actors and directors. And this year was much more difficult to accomplish some of those things. So I have not seen as many movies as I would have liked to. We're going to change that for next year. I think with the HBO Max announcement and some of these other streaming services getting involved, I think I'll definitely be better, but I would say there's no rhyme or reason right now for, I should say there's a rhyme and a reason. There's no like, it's not a top five list or like a top 10. We're just going to kind of bop around and talk about our favorite movies. So I'll kick it over to you first, Taylor.
All right. Well, I feel like probably the best movie this year, in my opinion, was Palm Springs. So I'll just start with the top ones. Hulu exclusive. I think it was the most expensive movie purchased by a streaming service that was done outside of a streaming service. They beat the record by 69 cents because it was funny. That's an actual story.
Whenever I hear stories like that, I just think back to Entourage going to Sundance and like trying to sell their movie.
But yeah, the movie was awesome. If you have Hulu and you haven't watched it, I don't know what the hell you're doing with your life. It's very Groundhog's Day. I mean, it's essentially Groundhog's Day. But it's Andy Samberg. He's great. J.K. Simmons is in it. I don't understand why, but that makes it even better. And the whole movie is just thoroughly enjoyable and has made me want to actually go to Palm Springs, which never thought I'd say.
Yeah, that's probably my favorite as well. It just like so delightful. I went in not really knowing like at all what the concept was. And I will be honest, when I like figured it, I was like, oh, okay. Because there have been some, that's been like a trend recently with like, oh, what's the Russian Doll and a couple others. So I was like, oh, maybe I don't want this right now. But man, it's such an enjoyable spin on it.
Yeah.
While also like kind of like investigating some more like personal and like human things, which is some more, it's both your classic immature Andy Samberg, but also a little more mature, which is nice.
Yeah, it's also tops on my list of movies I did watch this year. I think it's an interesting take on like the time travel paradox, being stuck in a loop, Groundhog's Day, because it does bring in some of that more raw human emotion. It's less of like, I need to complete task A to move into this phase of like getting back. It's more like, you know, he's accepted where he is because this life is better than like what he had before, right? It's like it's a weird twist on human life and emotion. So I liked that. Kristen Milioti was incredible in this movie as the co-lead with Andy Samberg. I think she brought a really great twist into the whole thing. That Andy Samberg has been, well, spoilers. Andy Samberg's like been in the loop forever and like eventually brings her along into it is like also like kind of selfish and at the same time like a funny, it's a funny twist on things. Yeah, and I thought J.K. Simmons was really funny, but kind of also like a very strange character for the movie. But yeah, Palm Springs is definitely worth watching.
Real quick on it, jut in, because another of my favorite movies that I actually just watched recently, very similar in a more, I guess, like art house, like artsy way. I'm thinking of Ending Things on Netflix.
It's one Netflix.
Yeah. Directed by Charlie Kaufman. So it's very much in that vein of, you know, adaptation and being John Malkovich, where pretty out there. And it's not as straight up like, oh yeah, this is Groundhog's Day, but that definitely ties into things. Both Jesse Plemons and Jesse Buckley are the two leads. Yeah. And like the movie works just because they have very, I don't want to say great chemistry because that's not the point of the movie, but very interesting chemistry. If Palm Springs kind of like dives into, you know, more like emotional, like human stuff, then this goes like all the way into it. Not necessarily the same topics, but it is, it'll get you thinking. So I would definitely give it a strong recommendation. It's one of those movies where, and this is something I've kind of come to accept the past year or two in my movie and TV watching career is, no, sometimes you don't need to understand everything about a movie, or not everything has to be explained. So once you accept that, it's just, you can think a lot about stuff, and it's really enjoyable with a fantastic short performance by Toni Collette.
Oh, she's great. That's one of the movies that has been on my list all year in a medley. I just haven't pulled the trigger on, or I guess not all year, but since it's come out. I know it's going to be really good. It's just, it also seems like it's going to be pretty heavy. And
so I will say it is like kind of heavy, but I'm thinking of Ending Things is not referring to ending things like that. It's referring to ending a relationship.
That's fair.
So
it's a little that more, makes me feel a little more accessible. Well, I think that's a good caveat because I did see it on a couple of year-end lists, and I was like, geez, I don't know. Like, yeah, this year has been tough. Like, I don't need that dark.
They get it out of the way in, like, the first scene or two, and when I was watching it, I was like, oh, thank God.
All right, that's good to know.
All right, Taylor, what else you got?
Another one. Actually, I'll switch it up a little bit. The most recent that I've watched that's come out this year, Fat Man. Mel Gibson plays Santa Claus. Walton Goggins is hired by a piece of shit kid who, I'm going to steal this joke from Nick Cheney, looks like a young Ben Shapiro. Hires Walton Goggins to go murder Santa Claus. And yeah, it's a truly ridiculous movie, but it does a fantastic job of toting the line of knowing what it is, but not overstepping anything. Nothing really feels that forced. They're not trying to go for laughs as much. They're just accepting that it's ridiculous. They build this world that's ridiculous, but they just stay within that world. And it's, yeah, a violent action movie that, it's not too violent, but violent action movie about trying to murder Santa Claus.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's weird tonal. It's not the, yeah. It was very much not what I was expecting, but it was enjoyable enough. I probably won't watch it ever again, but it's a movie I'm glad exists, I would say.
You don't think you'll add it to your Christmas movie rotation?
No, it's not like, yeah, it's just,
for me,
it takes itself a little too seriously, yeah. I guess. But it really does. It's not enough to, like, well, yeah, turn you off Gibson. Of it. But,
for me, yeah. It's one that if I finish another holiday movie and it's on TV or some streaming service live.
You think Fat Man's going to be playing on TBS a lot?
I don't know. It seems like something that could get picked up by FX as, like, one of the weird mid-afternoon movies. Yeah.
FXX.
So if it's something along those lines, I'm already like two or three beers deep. Oh, fuck, I'll watch it a little bit. But yeah, it's enjoyable enough movie.
All right, right on. My next movie would be Borat. I had a lot of hype for Borat 2. It was good. I don't think I liked it nearly as much as the first one. It does expose a lot of issues in American culture, just like it's intended to do. It's like your very classic Sacha Baron Cohen. But go ahead.
I was say I loved the second Borat. It's definitely as like outright funny as the first one. But the like, this is a sentence I never thought I would say. Like, the father-daughter relationship in the Borat movie is, like, very heartwarming. And I think it accomplishes, like, probably a little bit more, just, like, the satirical takedown of a lot of American things. And then, just, yeah, the trade-off is, like, it's not as funny, but it still is, like laugh out loud at many parts. But yeah, like, it has a very nice emotional core to it that I was not expecting.
Yeah, and I think maybe my expectations were the, like, obnoxious laugh-out-loud funny moments, and instead it's a little bit more of a think piece on, like, American culture and exposing some of those things, which is, I was also expecting that, maybe just not to the degree we got it, but it is, I mean, there are some parts that are still just, like, had me rolling on the floor. The scene where he is the entertainment for, like, the right wing rally, and he sings the song about sending Obama to prison, and, like, all these guys with Confederate flags, like, singing along with him and, like, doing Hitler signs, was, like,
jarring.
It is fucking crazy. There's just, like, people with, like, automatic rifles in a park singing this song. I was like, this is fucking bonkers. And anytime you can make fun of Rudy Giuliani, I think is an incredible moment. It's like, those two moments in particular really stand out. And then third would be where he goes to buy the cage for his daughter, And he's like openly talking about like, will this be large enough to like fit her in? And this like rural Texas shop owner is like, yeah, like she should be able to fit in there. It's like I don't even understand how they even could capture that footage.
Well,
it's just crazy.
I think it's like, it's really interesting because they don't, it doesn't seem like they go out of their way to make, they just let people make themselves look bad. Like, I think like the most fascinating thing about the movie is the dudes that let Borat like stay with them, like, are probably
during COVID,
probably have like, you know, politics that Sacha Baron Cohen hates, but they were like so nice to him the entire time, and like the movie doesn't really make them look that bad.
It's interesting, so, and important,
like, it's important to say, and like they were still like willing to let this strange, very strange man like stay with them, even though, you know, like I have no idea what their living arrangement was, and the amount of Mountain Dew that they were drinking was alarming. But I thought that whole aspect was fascinating.
Yeah, and I think I forgot to mention another like fascinating and very important thing to talk about is like the filming of this at like the beginning of COVID, and when they bring him into their house, it really is the three of them just like discussing what is going on. And like, I think that a lot of what those two random guys think of the virus is like batshit crazy, but like, it is interesting to see, like, we didn't really know a whole lot in April, and just to see these two guys just like inviting this random stranger into their house, and then them just like trying to become friends and just like talking about the virus and like, I don't know, just like talking about the news was very, it was just very interesting. And like them just genuinely trying to help him find his daughter. It was crazy. I was like, this is baffling. But,
all right. We should probably just rattle off some.
Yeah.
We're at 30 minutes already here. We got a whole.
All right.
We never discussed.
We can go as long as
you want. Okay. That makes sense. We never discussed the pod length with adding a whole subject.
Well, this is a test. Let's see how this goes.
People are going to love it.
Yeah.
All right. Let's keep rolling.
Yeah, move on. Taylor or Mark, you're next. Doesn't matter.
All right. I'll throw this one up because I know Taylor will probably have comments on it. Color Out of Space.
Was that 2020? I thought that was 2019.
So I Googled it because I thought it was 2019 as well, and I saw mixed results, so I'm just going to say it's 2020, and it's an opportunity to talk about Nicolas Cage, and we are staunchly pro Nick Cage on the earbuds. We will not hear anywhere otherwise. It's a indie take on a classic Lovecraft story. With surprisingly good special effects, I will
absolutely
say. It's like a very visually arresting movie. Just a very fun Nick Cage performance. Just like an all around, like kind of creepy, kind of gross, kind of thrillerish movie, topped off with Nick Cage screaming about alpacas in multiple scenes. So what more do you want?
Yeah, I'm a big horror movie fan, and this was one of the better ones that I've seen in a long time. Just it checked a ton of boxes, especially if you love kind of campy horror movies. But I mean, this one's not even that campy. It's really only Nicolas Cage that brings in the camp. visually it's beautiful. Story, Lovecraft is great. It's a good adaptation of it. I was a little worried the first time I watched it, just because Nick Cage doesn't really start doing Nick Cage things until like 20 minutes in. I was worried that was going to be like a very mellow performance by him, but he ratchets it up a bit.
Yeah, there's like a distinct plot reason for him to act in the Nick Cage way, yes. Which I found funny.
And then, it brings in kind of some Cronenberg elements, which is not what I was expecting at all, which is gross, but also I have a soft spot for Cronenberg movies. So, yeah, that movie fucking rocks. Strongly recommend it to anyone who will watch it. Even critics and audience score on Rotten Tomatoes, it's a lot higher than you would expect it to be looking at the trailer. And I think pretty much anyone who will watch it, as long as they can deal with the grossness, will enjoy it if you like horror movies.
Yeah, I will say I have like a weird kind of like squeamish towards more just like realistic like surgery type things on movies, but typically like body horror is like I'm fine with, but one of
just generally
is like preface like
I gotcha.
Like, one of the things in that movie I found, like, genuinely yes. upsetting. Yeah.
I completely agree.
I was like, oh, my God. Get this off my TV, please.
Yeah. That's a good way to put it. Also, Tommy Chong in a very understated role. Never thought I would say that yeah. sentence in my life.
That was a very... Yeah, very interesting. Good casting of that movie.
And also, it does a few horror movie things that, like, I don't want to give away too much, but back in the 80s when everyone did cocaine, there were things that were okay to do in horror movies that, like, 90s and 2000 movies, like, whoa, you can't do that. That's too fucked up. This one was a nice throwback to that as well, where they're like, eh, fuck it, we'll do the fucked up things. It's a horror movie.
Yeah, that's...
So, I know that's super vague, but if you watch it, you'll probably understand.
Oh, this is the cocaine thing.
Well, I mean, Nick, I assume you haven't seen that, so I'll just jump in with my next movie.
I have not.
Sticking with horror movies, The Invisible Man.
Yeah, do it.
I actually think this is probably the best made movie I've seen in 2020. It's, again, visually, it looks beautiful. Plot is very good. When horror movies are, and it's not even much of a horror, it's more of a thriller. But when those types of movies are at their best, they have a strong political or societal message behind them. And this one, without giving too much away, I guess, is very clearly about not believing women and gaslighting women, kind of victim shaming and that sort of thing. And I think they do a great job of exploring that. Whole movie's just incredibly done. Elizabeth Moss is great, even if she's a weirdo in real life, but she's an incredible actress. Yeah.
Bowie is struggling. Yeah, I was worried you guys would hear that.
Joel's not in the apartment and he's freaking out that she's gone.
That, we have the same thing. It's, the dog doesn't miss me nearly as much as the dog misses the other person.
Makes you feel nice and loved.
Yeah, for real. Invisible Man is probably the movie I want to see the most from
2020. It's on HBO now.
I didn't see. So, yeah, I'll definitely check it out. The fiance is not a big fan of thrillers or horror movies. So, like, those are two genres it's hard for me to get to. We watch a lot of rom-coms. So I'm excited for the purposes of the pod. I will have to do some more artistic viewing for myself.
Probably ulterior motive.
Yeah. Yeah. My last movie I want to comment on for the year is a Netflix rom-com. It's called Love Guaranteed. It's with Damon Wayans and Rachel Lee Cook. It's just, like, really refreshing and very funny and very, like, easy to watch. It's not... it's a rom-com. It's a Netflix original rom-com, but it's about Damon Wayans suing a dating app because it's called Love Guaranteed. And in their fine print, it says that they'll guarantee love if, you know, as long as you've been on at least 400 dates. But like, he goes on 400 dates and documents all of them and like tries to sue them for damages. It's really funny. And it's just like kind of an interesting take on dating apps. That's my last movie. I have one cheat that I do want to comment at the end. So I'll kick it over to Mark for anything else you got.
Yeah, just a quick couple that I won't really like talk too much about. In the Vast of the Night, it's on Prime, I think. It's a very, like, very low budget, sort of throwback sci-fi to like 50s sci-fi almost. Yeah, it's a period piece. But it's just very interesting to see them like make like a genuinely like engaging, thrilling movie, just like on like a shoestring budget. Or I don't know what the budget actually was, but it's very minimalist. So that's a fun one. And then a final nod to Spike Lee's The Five Bloods on Netflix. It's a very messy movie, but there's a lot to take out of it. And Apocalypse Now, I think, is like I don't know if it's one of my favorite movies, but I find it like incredibly interesting how that story is sort of, because that story is initially from a book.
Super problematic.
But that story is kind of like becoming, or has become, like a classic like story archetype, yeah. I guess is what you would call
it's a Descent into Hell movie,
but like over yeah it's very interesting, I think, too, especially because it is the where typically when like Apocalypse Now took that story and shifted it from, you know, going into like colonial Africa to Vietnam, and then Spike Lee was like, yeah, I'm gonna do it in Vietnam still, but it's gonna be like with black soldiers instead. And it's like a genuinely like very different movie while maintaining like a lot of the same plot structure.
So just one kind of side thing to that. They've announced that they're going to be doing a Heart of Darkness animated movie, which seems super fucked up and they probably shouldn't. But then I looked into it, and the cast is Andrew Scott, who people know as the hot priest from Fleabag season 2, who's a great actor. Michael Sheen and my dude Matthew Rhys, which are all actors that I love.
Oh,
so I might have to watch that, even though it's a fucked up story.
I mean, I'm sure it'll be
God, I hope so.
I read that book in high school, and I was like, "Whoa, this is on a recommended reading list, huh?"
But then, just one other thing, just a quick hitter. I won't talk too much about Happiest Season on Hulu. Pretty solid rom-com Christmas movie. Kristen Stewart, Aubrey Plaza, and Alison Brie. There's another actress, but I don't know who she is. It's surprisingly decent. Although the ending they completely botched, but whatever. That's a decent one.
Okay. I've seen that pop around too, so I'll get to that also. My last comment, we can move on to our favorite songs of 2020. Not a movie, but I am so grateful it came out this year, The Last Dance. I do want to, man, oh. God, was it good. Just like it really at the perfect time at the beginning of quarantine and COVID. Fuck yeah. It was
sick. Very nice to have that like appointment Sunday night viewing as well, where like everybody on Twitter would talk about it. If you really haven't had that completely since Game of Thrones ended.
No, it was nice. It felt like a little bit normal. Yeah, it was really nice. It was really, really nice. So
Yeah.
Shout out the Last Dance. Shout out the Bulls. All right, let's transition to favorite songs of 2020. We can keep this relatively short. Maybe we'll spend the next 10, 15 minutes just funneling through songs that we really loved from this year. I'll kick it off. I want to quickly just mention Good News by Mac Miller. It was my favorite song from his album Circles, which was on our top 10, my top 10 list. I think all three of our top 10s, actually.
I think it was the only album. I don't think it was on mine.
Okay.
Which one?
Run the Jewels.
Yeah.
No, Run the Jewels was the only one that was on all three. Which check out the top 10 episode from last week. But Good News sounds the most like something that would have been on his last album, Swimming. It's very much about like dealing with the pressure of people wanting you to be happy and not being allowed to just be sad, and like that's okay. So I love this song. It's very sad to listen to now.
I completely agree.
Love
this
song.
Was actually on my list of songs I wanted to bring up as well. It's super sad, just knowing how everything kind of played out, but truly a beautiful and great song. Mark?
Taylor, okay. you can go ahead. I didn't do a whole lot of prepping for this.
Okay. I guess the first song that I want to bring up is actually a cover. It's Weird Fishes by Leanne LaHavas. I'm sure I'm pronouncing something wrong in there. I'm confident on La, but not the other two as much. Weird Fishes is a Radiohead song. It's one of my favorite Radiohead songs. It is a gorgeous, gorgeous, beautiful song about just being a lonely weirdo. And people sometimes forget how great Radiohead is at making music, because they do a lot of weird shit and their voices aren't as good. So when you get a legitimate R&B singer or singer-songwriter covering any of their songs, it just hits different. And this song is beautiful. It's haunting. She knocks it out of the park. Her voice is incredible. Strongly recommend listening to it.
I'll make my way there. I like beautiful and haunting.
I'll just throw out my... So, obviously, every song off all the albums I talked about last week. But the two... So, I was just trying to think of, like, loose songs, and I really couldn't any, like, beyond, like, the big singles. That's what I was getting hung up on, like, whoa. But, so, one big single I really liked is Value by ASAP Ferg, because, and that even might have been in 2019, but the album came out this year, so that counts.
Yeah, we'll count it.
Just so much fun. And he does his like fun little accent thing towards the end of it. Just incredible stuff from an Earbuds favorite. And then the other one, I think it got brought up. Iris by the Iris cover by Maggie Rogers and Phoebe Bridgers.
Yeah,
it genuinely is a good cover, but just like everything surrounding it, good vibes all around.
Have you done your song playlist yet?
I didn't know we were supposed to.
Well, no, not necessarily. I know we've done that like previously. Like
I'll probably dip
into our favorite songs.
I'll probably put something together before the end of the year.
All right, right on. All right, just like I'll fire off real quickly, and then we can move on to Kid Cudi. So, Night Crawling by Miley Cyrus features Billy Idol. I just find that a very, very intriguing and fun combination of artists. And her album is like a really fun 80s hair metal kind of throwback. And to include the legend, Billy Idol is really sick. Gemini by Knox Fortune. I mean, just dance your freaking shoes off. I don't really have a lot else to say other than like it's the most fun song I've heard this year. And then Four American Dollars by US Girls. It's a song about like the pitfalls of capitalism and living in a society driven by money. But it's like a very fun indie rock version. of that really sad tale. So those are my favorite songs of the year. At least I'll just comment on.
Wait, otherwise, do you mind if I just throw in a few others?
We talked about last week.
All right. So I'll be quick on
yeah,
all
these. Yeah, no, do it.
Cookie Chips by Reggie Snow featuring MF Doom and Cam something. I was too lazy to wait for it to finish scrolling. Just a fun song. Strongly recommend that one. And then Don't Just Vote by Cass McComb and Angel Olsen. In another time, that could have been just kind of an anthem. But it's a good song about don't just voting or don't just vote and actually stay politically active. And they do a good job of bringing up a bunch of topics. They go through and mention everyone's name, which is legit. You don't get that in songs a lot. And another song just to throw in there, just a fun one, Aquí Yo Mando by Kelly Uchis. That song just slaps. That's a fun song to get ignorant to. Kind of bummed. Yeah. Kind of bummed. It's her She's and Rika Nasty. Kind of bummed that didn't get an opportunity to listen to that at bars, but
ooh,
fun song to be ignorant to.
All right, right on. All right, let's do some Kid Cudi. Let's do some Kid Cudi. It's a weird segue. So Kid Cudi released Man on the Moon 3 last Friday, so just a couple days ago, I guess like 2 days ago. A follow-up to, I guess his last actual work was Kids See Ghosts, but I think before that he released like Speeding Bullet to Heaven. What am I missing?
The Demon Slaying one.
Oh.
Which, no, is like, I think very similar to what we're about to talk about. So,
mm-hmm.
So is relevant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, I mean, yeah. What'd you guys, instant quick reactions. I mean, this is like, I don't really get the Kid Cudi, like the trilogy of Man on the Moon.
There's not like, really like a lore to. Well, I think there might be, like, but it's mainly just like all the albums are kind of just about like, I shouldn't phrase it like,
being
so
high and lonely. Yeah,
it's just about being alone.
Yeah, I don't think there's a huge arc or anything to it. I do. So one thing I was thinking about listening to the album for the first time is just how much like the hip hop scene has changed since Man on the Moon 1 came out, because like at that time he was sort of the resident sad boy of hip hop, who's just like basically getting high and being sad, but his songs still had like a lining of optimism to them. And I think you could say that about like this album still, but now a large chunk of like today's like mainstream and like most popular hip hop is about like just like getting like so messed up on like perks and Xans and just like dolling yourself to the outside world with like without like any like optimism to it. So it like he kind of like made a blueprint almost that just like got way more darker and has passed him by.
Yeah, well, the entire SoundCloud generation of SoundCloud rap is essentially like that. Really,
even like
dark.
Future like owes a lot to that. Even though like the sound itself is a little different, but like a lot of the content is, you know, like drugging yourself up to cope, and So I like getting a third.
I think that's interesting.
You know, like a Kid Cudi album in 2020 is like a little different, I think, because he is largely doing the same thing. Correct me if I'm wrong on that. Like, that's what sounded like to me.
Also, I did a bad job of doing research, but it sounded like a lot of this was him trying to sound like Lil Yachty, which is strange to me. There's a lot of songs just with like the ad-libs, like, yeah, in the background and all that.
I think Travis Scott does like some of the background vocals on a few songs. So that's what you're hearing.
But yeah, it wasn't very good. he talked a lot about being in the city, which had major like you live in the suburbs, but you visit the city on the weekends and drink Monster and wear Oakley's still vibes. that's how I felt listening to it. But yeah,
that's really funny.
I don't know. It wasn't terrible. It was just like a D plus, maybe a D.
Damn, that's harsh. I like generally liked it. I don't know how often I'll go back to listen to it, but and I guess like my largest criticism is outside of Tequila Shops, which is like the second track, but like first song. There's not really like a standout song. Like Man on the Moon, the first Man on the Moon had like multiple. Man on the Moon 2 had like Mr. Rager and Erase Me, which are still just bangers. This one just was sort of lacking anything on that level, I would say. But there were still, I think it's like a pleasant album still, and he does just kind of like land on like fun musical like little phrases and snippets that are catchy and nice, but yeah, nothing like mind-blowing.
Yeah, this to me sounded, it did sound a lot like his last one, the Demon Slaying, what you were saying. Which you brought up, which is like very, like it's very hum forward, like with like really trap heavy sounds. And I think what got me when I was listening to this is he's, like you said, he's doing the same thing he did in 2009 with like the first Man on the Moon. And
he's too old for that shit.
I don't know how to say it. Like that first album. Well, it's just like that when that album came out in 2009, like we were in high school and it was really fun because like you are kind of like in your own feelings, like you're dealing with other kinds of emotions that you just like haven't grown up yet, right? Like you don't really know how to deal with stuff. I think like for our generation, that's why that first album is like very interesting because it is like the beginning of like being okay with talking about like mental illnesses and like, you know, asking for help and all this other stuff. He hasn't really like grown with us though, because every album he releases is this same exact
thing. I think like musically, like, he hasn't grown.
I have grown up.
He's gone through like a lot of shit. But
yeah. I shouldn't say it like that. Yeah, you get, you know what I'm saying? Like musically, it isn't different, or like I don't feel that like the message has changed in 10 years, and like maybe like whatever, like he can make whatever he wants, but like this for me was just like, yeah, I could put this on in the background, but like I don't think this is made for me because I'm at a different place in my
honestly
life.
When I was listening to it, I also did kind of think of Magna Carta, the Jay-Z album, where it just seemed like he was trying to make
trash. Overstuffed.
It seemed like he was trying to stay young and relevant when he should really just be honing his craft and growing more. But
yeah, yes. I think putting Phoebe completely agree is also very funny because in 2020 she became the like the internet star of sadness in the indie rock space, and to have her on a Kid Cudi song is like the ultimate, like, teenage sad boy. Like,
I don't even remember it's very how weird. The song goes, though, is the thing. It's just like,
No, I have no idea. I have no idea.
Yeah, the feature list and itself is very strange because it's Phoebe Bridgers.
It is.
And then one song has Skepta and Pop Smoke. And then Trippy Red is on another song, and that's it, which is like a fascinating collection of artists. But yeah, the song with Skepta,
it's a weird combo.
Does not feel like it fits on this album at all. It feels just like a Pop Smoke song, which is fine, and I like the song for the most part. It's a little disjointed, but yeah, a weird inclusion.
That was one that when it came on, it stood out the most or more than any other song to me. And my just knee-jerk reaction is, why would Kid Cudi put this on his album? Because he is by far the weakest of the three. yeah, but like...
It's for stream.
Release that as a single on the side. Don't put it on the album where you're just getting outworked by everyone.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. Yeah, I don't think this album was made for me. I think that Kid Cudi has found a space with like 16 to 18 year old teenagers in high school, and like that's who.
Yeah, I don't even know if that's the music. Case though, is because I don't know if like they're connecting with Kid, right? You know, I feel like this is more catered towards people our age. I don't know.
Again, I feel like this is for the kids.
Oh, I don't know
that we like, went to high school with that still live in our hometown.
That could be.
I really don't know that people in high school now are listening to, like, why would they listen to Kid Cudi? Like, maybe that there's your Pop Smoke answer. Like they have no connection to him.
Yeah, I mean that's totally fair.
But I will say it's always I was never like a huge Kid Cudi stan or anything. No, I liked the man on the first couple Man on the Moons. But it's always good to like see him. I'm assuming he's like doing relatively well if he's releasing albums. So it's like I said earlier, he's had a tough go of things. So it's always good to like see him, you know, be able to like,
at least I agree. And like, for as much as I've kind of talked shit about this album, I do find him super charismatic and likable. It's just, this album didn't really move the needle for me. I want to see him do well, and I enjoy seeing him in things I enjoy as well, or just even in interviews. But it just didn't really do anything for me.
Yeah, it's very much like if you had listened to, I think it's like Passion, something in Demon Slaying, we're going to slowly piece the name of that album together.
Passion, Pain, and Demon Slaying.
If you had listened to that album when it came out and somebody goes like, Kid Cudi's going to release an album in 2020, you'd have a pretty good idea of what this album is going to sound like.
Like, Baptized in Fire, Swim in the Light are two songs I can think of that sound exactly like this. It's just like, which is fine. So, like you guys said, I'm happy to see him release an album. Hopefully he's doing well. I don't think this really hit the mark for me. I won't probably go back to this very often. There's maybe a song or two I'll throw on a playlist. But otherwise, I think there was a lot of like hype on the internet for this. But like, this is 58 minutes long. Yeah, I'm not going to come back to this whole thing to like listen to that.
Right.
For an hour. So... Yeah, you guys have anything else? Otherwise, we can wrap this baby up.
That's about it. Wow, he's got his. So I'm just looking at his Spotify page. His song with Travis Scott, The Scots, is at 416 million streams, which is like his. That's more than all of his other songs.
Yeah, which is crazy because like if I had to give you like my favorite. The best five Kid Cudi songs that were also popular. I don't even think that comes close. It's just like the difference in street, like, you know, having Travis Scott on there in 2019. Like,
hold on. I want
to. It's going to propel
this
you
all,
to.
This always fascinates
416.
Me. Like,
Taylor, welcome to the, we do a segment where you have to guess within a couple million how many streams.
Yeah. What?
Has.
So what do you think? Holy shit, dude. The Travis.
I'm looking
Scott
at it. So good.
Insane. What do you think Sicko Mode is at on Spotify alone?
Taylor, do you want to take a guess? Number of streams of Sicko Mode.
Uh
just texted the. I accidentally clicked a song and it messed up.
All right. Well, Taylor's out. I know what it is. It's 1.3 billion.
Insane. All right. We can end on that note.
It is insane.
Taylor clearly.
It is insane. Episode. Yeah. Welcome to the first pod with Taylor.